Hi, everyone. Welcome to Teaching Matters. This podcast is produced by NPR affiliate WOUB Public Media in Athens, Ohio. I'm your host, Scott Titsworth, Dean of the Scripps College of Communication at Ohio University. You know, a common theme facing many school districts is a simultaneous lack of resources, particularly for instructional and support staff, and also a lack of candidates to fill jobs that are available. We see this in local school districts, but of course, it's a nationwide phenomenon. In fact, the human resource challenge facing schools is very real and even more salient in specialized areas like accessible and special education. Today, we'll be discussing aspects of this issue, as well as potential solution steps. My guest today is Leslie Slaughter. She is the Senior Vice President of Saliant Schools, an organization that provides staffing solutions in specialized areas such as special education for schools. Leslie, thank you for being a part of this.
Yes, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So I want to, you know, I don't want this discussion between you and I to, you know, be all a downer of staffing issues, but we know it's a real problem. So I want to kind of start by discussing with you, from your perspective, what, you know, what sort of the scope of the problem is. And I think an entrance to that is to talk about the survey that your organization did. So you recently conducted a survey trying to understand sort of the staffing challenges facing PK-12 education as a whole. Can you talk about the scope of that survey and maybe, you know, discuss why it was that Saliant wanted to conduct that survey?
Yeah, it's a great question. So as you mentioned, we are helping staff public school districts across the country. And we know, as you've already mentioned as well, that there are challenges. There are staff shortages. There is burnout. There's lack of support. It's felt across the U.S. Mm-hmm. So we conducted the research because we really wanted to understand from the professionals that we have out on assignment, what are their perspective of the challenges, and then just really to understand their general sentiments regarding long-term employment in the education sector. We surveyed about 400 plus professionals, including general ed teachers, special education teachers, school-based counselors, speech language pathologists, and occupational therapists, all who were currently working in the fall of 2023. Mm-hmm. And our findings definitely highlighted what we thought. But yeah, we really, really wanted to understand what their long-term outlook was like and, mm-hmm. and what their plans were.
And so some of the stats that jumped out to me when I was, you know, reviewing some of the results, 68% of your respondents reported burnout, and that compared to approximately 59% of respondents in other sectors looking at other data. In other words, the takeaway that you get is that people that work in the education sector have, you know, about 10 percentage points higher reporting of burnout than other people do. What do you think are some of the contributing factors of that?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, what we hear often is just the staff shortages that already exist. And so you are working double time, it feels. You know, you're taking on the caseload and the workload of just being short-staffed. Mm-hmm. Therefore, work-life balance is out of control. Yeah. And so their cups are just emptied out. When they go home, they're empty, and it's hard to return the next day running on an empty tank. Lots of mental health and stress issues, you know, heavy caseloads. Again, we work so much really with specialized, mm-hmm. Special education professionals, and just caseloads that seem so hard to get their arms around. And then, you know, being part of public education, there's lots of responsibilities that are non-teacher related, mm-hmm. non-teaching related that causes burnout. But, you know, in that 68%, I think the biggest thing to me was that they still find their work significant and they feel like they're making an impact. But at what point, what's the cost? And it's just kind of, do we throw up our hands and say we're just too burnt out to even see the beauty in what we're doing?
Yeah. And interestingly, I mean, as I understand it, Saliant is really working more in the specialized education sector, like in speech path and counseling and maybe special education. Am I getting that scope fairly correct?
Yes, you are correct. The majority of our placements fall within the special education mm-hmm. world. Yes.
And but you know, to that point, one of the things that the statistics would also suggest is that there are more students as a percentage now that are in need of specialized education services across that scope. And there, you know, we haven't kept staffing at pace with that. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes. Our survey said that even just the long-term effects of COVID impact and pandemic impact, mm-hmm. that we haven't even fully recovered to pre-pandemic days as far as workforce and schools goes, coupled with this growing demand of students with, students are coming to school with more needs than ever before.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a continuing trend, yeah.
But it almost seems to me, in hearing you talk about it, looking at the report that you all did, but then also, you know, paying attention to teachers in my own life, I realize that's anecdotal, but then looking at other national studies on teacher burnout, when the students with specialized needs, however significant those are, and their needs are not being met, then that sort of all rolls onto the classroom teacher then, right? I mean, if you're the math teacher and you have a student in your class that's not having their need met by a special education teacher, you know, in whatever variety that is, that sort of falls on your shoulders then, right? And that adds to the burnout for that classroom teacher.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think there's greater impact just for the teacher. It's for the other students in the classroom that may be distracted or held back because attention has to go to someone who has a different need than them in the classroom. So, yes, it does fall heavily on general ed as mm-hmm. well, for sure.
So turning to what it is that Saliant provides as a solution, your organization is providing staffing resources in these specialized areas. What does that look like if I'm a district? So, you know, maybe to put this in a context, the place where I live in Athens, we have several school districts around the city of Athens that you would consider to be more rural. They maybe would have more difficulty from a funding standpoint of being able to afford to hire all the specialized education individuals that they would need. So if I was engaging with Saliant to try to solve a problem of meeting the needs of my students, what would that look like in terms of a relationship? You know, how would you work with my student population to help serve their needs?
Sure. So, you know, it is our goal to make life better for not only the professional, but for the district. So we value the relationship in two ways, you know, with the district that we're working with and with the professional that we're providing to the district. I think the advantage for a district, especially in a rural area, is if you think about how a district would hire, there's probably some pretty, in today's term, primitive ways of recruiting candidates. You know, it's maybe they post on their website, maybe smaller towns still use newspaper ads. Of course, there's the word of mouth. Saliant offers a nationwide pool of candidates. Mm-hmm. We are pulling people from all over and relocating them. And that's not something that districts typically have done on their own. They're not pulling from a nationwide, they're pulling from their local area. So the benefit is I've got, you know, candidates that I can really mobilize the workforce to where mm-hmm. the needs are the greatest. And I think that's a huge benefit because you were able to find specialized people too when we're looking across 50 states instead of just in your local area. And we tell districts the chances that we find somebody local is hard because you've mm-hmm. probably already looked. You've mm-hmm. probably already done that. But there are cases of people that will rather work through an agency at their local district for various reasons. But for most part, we're really mobilizing the workforce to where the needs are.
Right. And, you know, just to set the stage for listeners, this idea of this type of a human resource solution for problems like this is not just in K-12. I mean, even in higher education for counseling and psych services, we're using very much a similar model, right? So it's okay. not something that's unique. It's happening in a lot of different places just because of the needs of students and at different developmental levels. So I set that stage to say there's got to be some listeners out there going, how can somebody that is working with my students remotely develop the same relationships with them that would happen if they were in the building, to be able to really meet their needs? I mean, you know, how do you answer that potential concern?
Yeah, I think that's great. So we do place on-site and remote. So there are situations of hybrid, which is, you know, learning has changed so much. And that's kind of where we are today. There is at times a necessity for a hybrid schedule, especially in the cases of, you know, the cost of not having the service. So
right.
It's either we don't have it at all or we've got a remote person. Mm-hmm. And there are efficacy studies out there that say specifically around speech language pathology that the efficiency of doing this remotely and in person, we're testing very similar. Mm-hmm. And so it is some caseloads, it's not ideal. And some needs, it's not ideal to not have a person on site. But another thing that Saliant and other agencies we offer is we can offer a support person that is on site that maybe isn't a speech language pathologist, but an assistant level who can help with the child in the classroom or in front of the computer mm-hmm. who would be receiving the remote service. Because that is important. There's logistics of taking a child from a classroom and walking them to a room where they're going to receive services. And mm-hmm. we want to provide the on-site staff to support if we can, if this is a remote placement that we're doing.
Right. Are there particular specializations that, based upon what you're seeing, are in more demand right now than others?
Oh, that's a great question. We are seeing huge demands in behavior specifically. Mm-hmm. Really have seen that increase since the pandemic and since most schools have returned on site. And in fact, we, in conversations with some districts, the statistic that we have gathered is by 2028, the belief is that 26% of the student population will require some sort of behavioral or mental health services. Hmm. 26 of the student, mm-hmm. you know, 26%, that's large. And we want to be the change agents that help provide that. So I would say the last 3 years, the greatest demand we have seen is for anyone that really works in behavior. So we work with behavior analysts, BCBAs, RBTs, so registered behavior techs. And then on down to a behavior aide, which would be more like a paraprofessional that mm-hmm. specifically works in the cases of just children with behavior issues.
Mm-hmm. To what extent do you see any patterns of this need as you look across the country? I mean, are there any obvious patterns like rural versus urban or anything like that that stands out?
Early on, we've been in school staffing almost 23 years. Mm-hmm. And so early on in the early days, it was very, really rural focused because mm-hmm. those are the districts that, you know, I just can't attract anybody to come here or, and so our focus was really that let's go after these rural, districts and see how we can help and mobilize and really talk to our professionals about, you don't have to live there. You can live in a more suburban area if you mm-hmm. want, and then commute out. And we try to look at commute patterns and what makes sense for people if they are relocating. I would say today it is less rural and more suburban that we see, or even city life, inner city schools that have higher demands. I mean, it's definitely shifted a little. Mm-hmm. But I also think part of that was our focus. We just didn't focus so much on the metropolitan areas. We focused more on the rurals because our assumption was they would have the greatest need.
Right.
But the smaller the district, the smaller the need. And then you get to these big metropolitan districts and it's like, you know, we need 200 speech language pathologists versus the rural district that may need one or two.
Yeah. At some point it is kind of a numbers issue, isn't it? That
yes.
You have to follow where the students are at.
Yes.
Are there specific qualities of the people that you are trying to match with schools? So in other words, if you're looking at the skill sets of individuals that you would try to place with a school, are there certain qualities that you think works best for, you know, Saliant to make that relationship work well? Or is it just a matter of, you know, making sure that they have qualifications and certificates that are required?
Yeah, it definitely starts with the qualifications and certificates required, because at some point there's just a shortage across, there's
Right.
we're not graduating enough speech language pathologists in the country, it feels like, to keep up with the demand. But then we look for quality, and a lot of it falls into people that are just at a mobile point in life. So new grads are great because they're very fluid. You know, they want to see the world and try new things. But there's also a population of maybe stay-at-home moms that are coming back into the workforce and whose husbands may stay at home, or their jobs are more local. And so the mom's joining the workforce again and is willing to drive a little further or even move somewhere for a period of 9 months. And then also, the way our education system works, people can retire quite young.
Yeah.
And so you've got people
I'm still working on that, just to let you know, but I get what you're saying.
Me too. me too. But yeah, so there's people that are, in their early 50s and are like, I would happily take, my children are out of the house in some cases, and I'd happily take what we would call more of a traditional travel assignment. I'm going to go somewhere for 9 months and work. But also, we think about the schools have these openings pretty much all year. Our goal is to fill them in August and September at the beginning of the school year. But the truth is, it goes on all year. And then we see a lot of maternity leaves in the spring. And so there are cases of people that just want to take short-term assignments. I'm happy to help finish up a school year. I'm happy to work from spring break on. And so that keeps us busy all spring, is filling kind of these short-term leaves and these people that truly just want to work for a little while. I'm going to work 6 months out of the year or whatever. So that's kind of the patterns and what we see this time of year, especially.
As you've been able to interact with, I'm assuming, multiple schools and districts over the time you've been with Saliant, have you noticed let me start this over again. So I'm going to editorialize this for a second. I almost feel like we are using the same model for special education that was essentially in place when I was a grade school student, where districts and schools knew that they needed certain professionals to support the classroom teachers in specialty areas like speech path. I had to go to a speech pathologist in kindergarten, right? So they have to have those services in place. They have to have counselors in place. But I don't know. I mean, my editorial comment is, it always feels like that was sort of solutions on the margin of what it was that schools were doing for a certain small percentage of students. But to hear you say 26% of students will eventually be needing these services, that's no longer a margin. I mean, that has to be, a very planned strategy on the part of every district and every school, recognizing that about 26% of what they do is going to be in these areas. I mean, do you see schools starting to sort of shift, their strategic planning to account for the fact that this is going to be a larger percentage of the work that they do with students?
I do see a shift. I don't think it's quite keeping up
with
what we see coming. And again, a lot of it is, where are we going to find these people? We know it's coming, but we're kind of stuck with, well, this is the way we've done it, or this is what our budget says. And the other statistic we saw was that 90% of school districts that we spoke with, again, this is outside of our survey when we talk to professionals, but just speaking to school districts, 90% believe that the amount of students on IEP plans will increase. So yes, the demands are increasing. It is not marginal. And it's not everything. Maybe it's not speech cases are growing, but cases of autism and behavior, and that is ever increasing. And, I have definitely seen a shift in that, for sure. On an average, it's like, 14% of the student population is classified somewhat special education, some extra services. I imagine that's changing to a greater percentage, year over year.
Right,
and I think
that's
kind of the sentiment among districts. Yeah.
I would assume, from my own perspective, and would be interested in hearing your thoughts too, that really providing these services is going to be necessary for making education accessible for all students, right? I mean, we can't ignore this, and we have to have some solution, you know, in place for students that need whatever these services are. I mean, there's no choice around that, right?
That's right. And that's, we talk about with the IDA, you know, federal mandated that students that classify with a special need or a disability are receiving free services in their public school system. So it's, schools are almost in this place where we have to provide it. So we have to think outside of the box,
yeah,
on how we find them, which is somewhat a sweet spot for us, but also a challenge for us too, because the demands are so great and the shortage of even people, like I said earlier, graduating with these degrees. I mean, there's only a limited supply of them, and it doesn't seem like that is increasing at the same pace as the needs for them are increasing.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, your organization and one similar to yours can help connect people in disparate geographic areas that would otherwise not be connected. But you can't change the you know, the overall number of people that are out there. I mean,
that's right.
Yeah, that's really difficult. So what do you, I mean, as you kind of look forward, you know, over the next 10 to 15 years, you know, do you think that the most important thing is that we solve sort of the supply issue? Do you think that there are policy changes that would be beneficial for schools? I mean, I'm kind of just asking you to look in a crystal ball and say, you know, from Leslie's perspective, what are some of the solutions that needs to happen in order to solve what is a continually growing problem for students right now?
Yeah. You know, I think part of it on a district level is districts could go to work on just how to retain staff. What can we do to retain what we have and then supplement with contract as needed? We work really hard to keep our staff. That's important to us. And we even talk about with our professionals, this is like a try before you buy or a date before you marry. You know, on a contract, you're signing up for a year at XYZ school district. And we want you to commit to that year. We're going to help you and support you through that year. But our goal is that you'd stay for continuity of service for the children and for students, because we believe that providing the services to the students that need it the most is the number one priority for us. And so if districts had internal staff that would stay, use the supplemental that we can then keep there year over year over year. Although, again, we're not really answering the supply question, but we are answering some of the problems with schools and turnover. Turnover is so,
right.
I mean, any employer will say it's detrimental. So how do we keep the good ones there? And so I think districts working on that. And a lot of these professionals, they just want some autonomy. And they feel like if I'm a contractor, I'm not really caught up into the district, maybe politics that come along with being a district employee. I am working through an agency. I have a little more autonomy to do what I do best. And then I think providing that support staff level that maybe doesn't have to have a specialized degree or certification, but is there to support, much like a paraprofessional or a behavior aide or people that are there to take some of the load off the professionals, would help.
Yeah.
And as far as policy changes, I mean, there are definitely things out there that were relaxed during COVID, maybe just to help, that now have come back into play, just some licensure regulations. And, you know, it's not easy when we're working with a mobile workforce to get licensed in every state. It is, it's just not. Sometimes there's delays, and, you know, we're in October and the school's begging for people to start. And I'm like, well, they're held up. Their license is held up. We're trying. So things like that might help make a mobile workforce and get people working quicker. And I think the nature of most of the professionals that we work with are female. And so you see this workforce that takes time off to raise children.
Yeah.
And then come back in. That doesn't help the supply, but that is a natural cycle that we see.
Yeah. It struck me when you were talking. So have you all developed recommendations for districts or for specific schools that are working with contract personnel in areas like this to help make that relationship more productive? And in other words, if I'm a principal or a superintendent and I'm using Saliant, are there things that I should be doing, recognizing that some very important people working with my students are not district personnel and they're not contracted with me, but, you know, they're working for a company like Saliant that's providing the service? What can I do to make that more effective?
Yeah, we talk to both our districts and our professionals about, you have to almost assume that you are a district employee and behave that way, not set yourself apart and saying, oh, you know, I'm not your employee. We don't want that. I think that immediately can cause strife. So we really encourage our professionals and the districts work together. Whatever you would let your staff do, if it's a professional development day, if it's a, hey, we are closing early today for remote learning, but you can still catch up on your paperwork, you know, that's still workable, billable time for you. We tend to find when districts do that, when they are allowing the contractors the same autonomy or flexibility that they would a district staff, we find longer term relationships because they feel like they're part of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
When they're treated as you're something totally separate, or there's jealousy, or whatever happens, then they typically don't want to stay. They'll change. One of the things that Slant also has done as we have an advisory board of these professionals. So they work for Slant, not in public school districts, but what they will do is work directly with the districts from, you know, we have five former directors of special education on staff. And so they'll consult with the districts. And that's just been a huge layer of support. So it's not just a recruiter speaking on the business side of how this works and what the qualities of my candidate, but this is also someone who has been in the field and says, this can help you. And they help advise the district. And also, they will work with district staff if needed. If they're, you know, if they're working with Slant, we'll say, hey, if you've got district staff that needs support or continuing ed, we're happy to offer that through our advisory team. And that's helped a lot, just solidify relationship. And we want long-term relationships.
That makes sense. I mean, in the field of journalism, we call it parachute journalism, where, you know, you parachute in, you do a story, and you're gone. It sounds like you all are also providing this type of consultancy that, you know, really evolves into a district developing a broader strategy on how they're going to address the needs of students in these areas, rather than just a quick and simple contract worker coming in. That's great. Leslie, are there any topics that you were excited to talk about that I've not asked you about?
You know, I think that what talking about teaching is so important, and just that the evolution of teaching and the evolution of staffing, and really Slant's, you know, putting a stake in the ground and said, we want to be change agents for the better. We want to encourage flexibility for professionals who are feeling burnout, and we've got the stats to say they are. And I think with contract, we're shaking it up a bit, because there is some flexibility there. And we have, you know, case studies of candidates talking about the way this has changed not only their professional life, but their personal life.
Yeah.
Being able to do things, you know, leaving when the bell rings, you know, because if you're a contract worker, you typically are paid hourly. And so it's, hey, it's 3:00. I've finished up my day. I'm leaving with my cup full. And then that makes me a better mother or a spouse or whatever that I'm doing outside of work, so that I can come back the next day with a full cup. And that's what we want, so we can avoid this burnout. And I'm excited about the schools that are adapting this and really taking it on and saying, versus us telling a parent, you know, we have not yet found a speech language pathologist, but we're working on it. Them embracing it and saying, we have a speech pathologist. Now, what do we do to keep them?
Yeah,
that's an important change that we're excited about working towards always.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, to the point that we made earlier in the discussion, following the same strategy that was in place in the 1970s when I was in grade school is not going to be the solution going forward. It's not
Absolutely.
The right it's not the right scalable approach to what it is that's going to be needed. Well, Leslie, I really appreciate your time in helping us learn more about sort of how you all are trying to be a part of a new future for students that have needs. So thank you for talking with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. So honored to be here.
Absolutely. So my guest today was Leslie Slaughter. She's the Senior Vice President of Slant Schools, and we will have a link to Leslie's bio in the text accompanying the podcast. Thank you for listening to Teaching Matters. If you would like to reach out to the podcast, feel free to reach to us on social media or send an email to teachingmatterspodcast@ohio.edu. It's very likely this is going to be the last of our shows for this season. Stay tuned over the summer on social media as we provide additional content and updates, and we'll be excited to start our next season when we all come back to school after what is hopefully a restful summer break. We wish everyone, all of our listeners, to have a great summer and take care of yourselves. Bye-bye.